This is The Mountain Life. I'm Lynn Ware Peak. Today on the show, we tackle an emotion that many people, and especially women, know all too well. Guilt. Guilt for working too much, not working enough, for putting themselves first or asking for help. Our guest this morning is author and psychiatrist Dr. Jennifer Reed, who is also a University of Pennsylvania faculty member and a specialist in women's mental health. In her new book, Guilt Free, Dr. Reed explores why guilt becomes so deeply ingrained and offers practical tools to break free from people pleasing, setting healthier boundaries, and how to reclaim a life guided by self-trust rather than self-criticism. Jennifer Reed, welcome to The Mountain Life.
Thank you for having me, Lynn. I'm excited to speak with you.
Well, I'm excited to talk about guilt because this is something that many of us, and as you say, especially women, use as a way to try to make ourselves better people, have more empathy, be more aware of things we may have not done quite the way we wanted to do. Guilt, I mean, it really pervades my life, and I didn't realize it until I started reading your book. So is this an emotion that we're unaware that we possess?
It's so interesting because so many women are telling me that. They're saying, I didn't think I had much guilt, or I picked up your book because I thought, well, this is interesting. Someone recommended it. And as they read through, they realize how powerful guilt is in their lives and how it sort of overrides all these different ways. And I do think just being able to put a name to it is really powerful. So I think defining it was really important to me with the book, but then thinking, why is this happening in particular to women so often? And that was really a question I wanted to try and answer because so many women in my practice, in my life, were saying, why am I doing this to myself? And I know that I knew they were not doing it to themselves, right? This is something that we really have been taught to do, trained to do, expected to do throughout our lives. And you can see that in how difficult it can be to move away from.
Why do you think that women experience guilt more than men do?
Well, I think that there are aspects of our sort of evolution in who we were as women over many, many, many years, and being the ones who primarily were, you know, having the babies, obviously, and taking care of them within sort of a village or a group or a community, that there was really a need, as far as safety goes, as far as survival, for us to be sort of liked or welcomed in the community. So I think there's this sort of deep drive to be liked, to be accepted, that I think can push us to try and make choices that we think won't upset anyone else or won't make us seem unlikable, right? But there's also these expectations put on us that we are just natural caregivers. And I think there are aspects of that, certainly, but this idea that we would be taking care of everyone else prior to ourselves or maybe at our own expense is something we've been taught. That's not really a natural instinct. In the animal world, you don't see that kind of sacrifice necessarily at their own expense. And so I think we've been taught that our role and to be a good woman is to take care of and manage everyone around us. And I think that's leading to these expectations that are just unmeetable.
Yeah, I often notice between my husband and me, my husband has no guilt, and he's not someone who shirks responsibility or any of those things. It's just not an emotion that he ever feels. And I go between wanting to be more like him and wanting him to feel some guilt occasionally. Just yesterday, we were driving in the car. My car had been recently repaired, and it seemed to be doing the same noise that it had been repaired for. And I said to him, oh, you picked up the car. What did you do with the receipt so I can look and make sure that we, you know, had all these things done? And he just said, I don't know what I would have done with the receipt. And I was thinking, because guilt has, you've made me start thinking about guilt, I would have felt bad that I wasn't more organized, that I didn't have a system for keeping a receipt, that I would have to call the mechanic and ask for one. And then that would make me feel like I was couldn't keep my life straight. And what a huge difference. What a huge difference. And so, you know, what do you do with things like that?
Right, because some guilt is adaptive, right? In the right circumstances where you truly have done something that went against your values or harmed someone else, you should be sort of pushed to try and repair, to apologize. That's part of what's kept our sort of species as forming community and allowed us to really thrive. I think that women, I mean, in some aspects, it's been adaptive for us to turn inward and say, what can I change or how can I be better? Because we've really had to in order to push into environments that we previously have been excluded from, where we've really had to prove ourselves. We've been forced to sort of turn inward these challenges that we face and said, I just need to make this better. I need to work harder. And I don't think that men have had a similar approach. I think there's a little bit more externalization of their challenges. Oh, well, this thing happened and that's why this didn't go well. And so I think there is this difference inherently, but I think also it's been a way for us to try and enter into what tend to be male-dominated environments. We weren't maybe allowed to say this wasn't my fault. We were just told to say fix it. You know, so I think that there's this internalization of we need to make that improvement. And when we see a problem in the environment, we turn inward and we feel guilty and say, how can I contribute? Why am I not doing more? Why am I not enough to correct this problem? And I don't think men make that similar assessment. I think there's a different approach for them.
Yeah. So we talked about adaptive guilt. What is maladaptive guilt?
Maladaptive guilt is that guilt is happening when there aren't any specific situations, right? I may ask a woman, well, what did you do wrong? I don't, nothing but everything, right? That there's a sense that you're sort of perpetually falling short of these essentially unreachable expectations. And not being able to reach those unreachable expectations is not failure, but I think women see it that way. So we set ourselves up for these really high expectations. Others begin to think, okay, that's exactly how you should behave. That's what a good woman would do. And when we don't believe that we've measured up, we enter into this place of just sort of constant guilt. I'm feeling behind. I'm feeling overwhelmed. I'm feeling guilty for having any of these emotions like sadness or fear or exhaustion. So we just are in this sort of perpetual state of trying to improve ourselves, which certainly benefits those who are trying to sell us any number of products that help us improve ourselves. So let's also talk about that force, but that then we're in this perpetual state of guilt that's really draining. It's maybe briefly motivating, but at a costly place because it's telling us you're already behind. You've already missed something or failed something. You need to be better. And I think that's really demoralizing and takes away from our confidence.
Yeah. So, as women, if we have more guilt in our lives, are we also the perpetrators of putting guilt trips on other people?
I think we can catch ourselves doing that, absolutely. And that's something, even in writing the book, that I've caught myself doing with my own kids, right? Noticing, because when we think about some of the research around interpersonal guilt, so guilt between at least, you know, two people, one of the sort of pseudo the benefits was the ability to kind of control someone who has more power than you, to be able to create a dynamic where they're doing something you want them to do, even though you may not have as much power as they do in that environment. And so there's an aspect of it that since women have been in positions where they may be with lesser power, lesser financial comfort, lesser security, have utilized guilt as a way to have things done that they were looking for or seeking if they couldn't just outright demand it. But I do think, though, that then we can end up using that on other people. And I think that as women, as we make this change to lower our guilt, we also have to make sure we're not policing other women's guilt or that we're not using guilt to get necessarily what we want because. In the first case, using, you know, policing other women's guilt. Oh, wow, she seems to take a lot of time to herself and doesn't even really feel badly that her kids are home without her. You know, these kinds of things or thoughts that we have, you know, those can really cause harm. But just in general, how do we learn how to say, like, we can allow ourselves to make these choices? We can allow ourselves to make decisions that are according to our needs and our wants without it being something that we're lacking or being selfish. That's another thing I hear a lot.
I think a lot of people have a hard time saying no, and maybe saying no to either invitations for things that they really don't want to do. I have long admired people who will say things like, that's just not going to work for me. So I'm just going to say no. And it's simple. It's so simple. And it would be something that a lot of people would need to rehearse over and over and over to even be able to say that. But this, I'm sure, is, one of the things that you're talking about in your book to help us not always flex that guilt muscle. Let's call it that.
Yeah, it's funny. My mom read the book and she's like, I keep reminding myself that no is a complete sentence, which is not in the book per se, but is, that practice of saying no, and that's okay. You don't have to necessarily explain yourself. I mean, I think there are many forces at play there that make it difficult, especially for women. Again, that desire and maybe that deep need to feel part of or accepted or liked. It's very hard to say no. I think in work environments in particular, women are often to take asked to take on tasks that are unpaid, but maybe they're planning parties, they're sort of taking notes in meetings, things like that. So there can be risks in a career standpoint of being able to say no. And so I want to just make sure that those are kind of out there. But when we think about it ourselves, there are two key areas I talk about. Is one is just allowing disappointment. Because I think that there's this belief that I certainly have with my own kids and family members. If I cause disappointment in someone else, I'm not being a good daughter, a good mother, I'm not caring, right? That there is this sort of become this catastrophic idea that causing disappointment in someone else is just a really awful and damaging thing that we should try to avoid at all costs, often by disappointing ourselves. So I think step one is recognizing that you can't exist in this world in relationships without disappointing people, probably often, because you have to say yes to someone, then you're saying no to someone else, right? That you can't be in multiple places. And allowing disappointment in others teaches them it's okay. It's okay to feel some disappointment. If someone's just immediately trying to fix it, trying to take it away, saying, I don't want you to feel this way at all, we're teaching them that that's kind of a scary feeling or a dangerous feeling, right? So it's like allowing disappointment is really important, that people will survive it, that it's an emotion like anything else and it will, pass through. So that's important. And then secondary, I would say boundaries. When people think about boundaries, they think about sometimes it as maybe a wall or a separation, whereas I really think about it as the sort of structure that allows you to have a deep and meaningful relationship. It's saying, I trust that I can offer you some without you taking all, and here are the things I can offer you. So it's actually allowing you to become closer and more connected because you feel safe to do so. You don't feel like you're going to be just swallowed up by someone saying, I need more and more. So boundaries and allowing disappointment can both really help nurture your relationships.
Yeah, that's very wise. If you're just joining me on The Mountain Life, I'm having a conversation about guilt with Dr. Jennifer Reed. She's a psychiatrist and an author of a new book called Guilt Free: Reclaiming Your Life from Unreasonable Expectations. So help us with a few concrete examples of the kinds of guilt that you see most pervasive among especially women in your professional realm. What are the biggest sources of guilt? Other than what we're talking about already, guilt as a mom, guilt as a daughter, and in the workplace.
Right. So I came up with this definition for guilt, which and I think that it's not that novel, but it just helps me sort of clarify that guilt is really the difference between our expectations of ourselves and our perceived reality. So really, what do we notice about what we're doing? Because that can be very different from reality, right? We may really ignore all the things going well and say, I just need to be better. So that difference, it was like, well, where are these expectations coming from? Because we're not creating these ourselves. And those four key expectations were constant caretaking, as I mentioned, as a daughter, as a mother, as a friend. Hyper accountability, meaning that we should be able to manage other people's feelings and experiences, which of course we can't. I can't as a psychiatrist. I certainly know I can't in my personal life. Trying to seek out perfection, that we need to be perfect in all things to be valuable, to be lovable, right? And then the fourth one, really having it all, this expectation that we could and should have it all and what that means. There's a lot of sort of value statements placed in there that we should want to do all of these different things in our lives, that we should be able to do it effortlessly without support, without any sign that we're fatigued or frustrated or irritable. So those four key expectation areas are where I'm hearing it most from women across all ages, from teens up into their 80s. These are the areas where I'm really hearing it most.
Yeah. So going back to being the person that accepts that you're going to disappoint others, it's just going to happen. For that person who has a really difficult time making that bridge over to it's just okay. If you're someone who knows that you're going to be disappointing someone and you're trying to help yourself, get over this guilt, what might you say? What kind of verbiage might you use when you are, for example, just saying no, putting up a boundary? Because I think, again, we want to explain ourselves. We want to say something like, I'm sorry to disappoint you. You know, are you suggesting we don't say that sort of thing?
Well, it's not that we can't say, you know, this isn't working for me. I wish I could do it for you, because I think that's often true. I think it's where we immediately try to sort of take it back or offer something else up right away that may not serve us, right? Like, I know I can't make dinner this weekend, but what if we have lunch on Wednesday when I know I have to move 3 meetings to do that, right? So it's just not trying to immediately fix it, but I think it's okay to express, like, this is really hard to say no. I care about you. I want to be able to help you, but I can't right now. I think that's certainly reasonable. As far as managing our own thoughts, certainly borrowed from cognitive behavioral therapy or CBT, talks about sort of thinking errors or cognitive distortions, which we all have, myself very much included. What are the thoughts that are coming to mind as we describe for ourselves what's going to happen when we disappoint, let's say, our parent? Oh my gosh, I'm upsetting my mom. I'm disappointing her. I'm the worst daughter in the universe, right? Or I'm uncaring. I'm ungrateful. Like, these sort of catastrophic, really critical negative thoughts are going to amp up our feeling of guilt, because it's telling us we are not only getting it wrong and disappointing, we're just blowing it entirely. So it's catching those thoughts. I mean, I go through the sort of speak process in the book of paying attention to those thoughts and saying, where are they coming from? Questioning, what are my expectations here? For example, as a daughter, is my expectation that I should be able to say yes to my mother about every single thing she asks me, or else I'm a terrible daughter? You see how there's zero room there to be human, right? And to have other family members, other needs. So working on those cognitive distortions can be a really powerful way to shift our thinking so that, yes, we're saying, I'm disappointing her. She might be upset today. I wish I could say yes, but I can't. And we're going to be able to work through this. Right? Like, that's a very different way to be speaking to yourself than, oh my gosh, I'm so terrible.
Right. What about when people get defensive as a response to their own guilt? And I'm thinking about when my mom, she lives a couple states away and I don't often get to see her. And she will say something like, wow, you know, you can travel, but you can't come and see your mom, which I do. I come and see her. But then I start to get defensive about why I can't come to see her, you know, instead of just saying, oh, I want to do it all. I want to travel and, you know, I want to come and see you. How do you talk yourself out of that?
Well, I think that you're responding to manipulative guilt, you know, to her credit. I mean, for your mother, we all do it. I'm not sort of calling her out specifically, but that's why manipulative guilt can be so damaging, is that it does create this sense of resentment, this sense of defensiveness, like you want to fight back, because I think it can even evoke shame, this feeling of I'm not a good person. You know, I'm not doing the right things. And so that's why that manipulative guilt can be so difficult. So recognizing that you're defensive is okay. This dynamic right now is one of this guilt is being placed on my shoulders. I don't like it. It feels badly. What could I do to actually shift that dynamic with her, knowing I can't control her, but being able to say, you know, mom, you're right. I can't always come to visit you. And I sometimes make choices that don't work for you, but I really want us to connect. So let's find ways to do that, right? This is why I want to call you regularly. Like, what are we actually doing? That perceived reality piece of the guilt equation. How are we showing up what are you doing to connect with her, right? What are we doing to connect with our loved ones? I think can be so important. You're reminding yourself, I'm not getting it all wrong. I'm putting forth effort. It may not be the perfect effort that she would prefer, but that doesn't mean that I'm a bad person, right?
Yes. Will you go over your guilt equation and how to identify the guilt triggers?
Yes. So on one side of the equation, one variable is our expectations. And that's where I think having those four categories can be helpful, because it tells us, okay, which of these am I in? And what that means is that so many women experience these, right? These categories exist because so many women in my practice and in my experiences clinically over the years and in my personal life have described these specific types. So you are part of a big group. You're part of this sort of commonality. So I think being able to identify those expectations is key, and also know that you might have some that you are particularly vulnerable to. You know, I had a friend who literally said, I've done a lot of work, I've been in therapy, I didn't think I needed this book at all, but then I got to the hyper accountability piece and I realized that I have so much guilt if I throw a party and I don't think everyone had the absolute most amazing time. And she's like, wow, I realized that was one that's really sticky for me. So I think that's important too. We're all trying to identify our own specific triggers, our own environments that cause it more commonly, our own relationships that call with our parent or something like that. So I think starting there, where it is the most potent, it can then generalize and broaden to the rest of our lives. But that might be, that's a sign to you. That's okay. That's where I want to do some work on this skill.
Wow. Your book is going to be such a tool for so many people. Before I let you go, Jennifer, I wanted to talk to you about your podcast, A Mind of Her Own, and your Substack newsletter. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so I started it in 2020 during COVID. It was a way for me to connect with my colleagues, with amazing people around the country that were doing really good work. And we're trying to find ways to share information with listeners that couldn't get in to see me, couldn't get in to see a provider. We're getting a lot of misinformation. So I speak to people that really have developed these treatments, develop these types of therapy, who are really at the front lines here, and try to translate that into a way that any listener can get some benefit. So I recently spoke to an ADHD expert who does CBT for ADHD, and we really talked about what he does to help people very practically. And I find that really motivating, because I want people to know there are really good treatments out there and ways for them to get started today to make those changes.
That's wonderful. One final question. I have an upcoming wedding in my life. My son is getting married. And what would your advice be to my future daughter-in-law who, you know, when you said you have this friend that worries that not everyone had the absolute best time at her party, you know, brides must experience this kind of guilt in such a big way. It is wedding season. What's your advice to brides?
Well, first of all, congratulations to your son. That's
Thank
so exciting.
You.
I think this comes up, you know, I spoke about it as holidays a bit in the book. I think weddings are certainly an example where the expectations are sky high. You're right. And that takes on this extra burden of what if this means something about our marriage or our future together? Like there's just, it carries all these broad, heavy connotations and traditions we're trying to meet. What I would say to her and to any bride is to say, okay, which are the things, what do you really value in your connection with the people that will be joining you? What do you really want to evoke for them? What do you want them to feel? And how can we let go of some of those other burdens, right? So maybe there's something that you really want to make sure is joyful moment that you have time to pay attention to, right? Maybe you've always loved to cook for people and you want to make sure that food is just the most delicious wedding food you've had, but you know you can't do all of it perfectly. So how do you kind of choose your moments? What were the things that are going to be memorable? For me, it was having music that all my friends could come and dance and just be silly. I was in musical theater, so we wanted a lot of drama and, you know, a lot of creative music that people could just dance and have fun. And I think also recognizing a wedding's a party, the marriage is everything else. So those really aren't connected, right? They're just, it's a party like anything else. And good luck to her.
Thank you. And Dr. Jennifer Reed, thank you so much for joining me on The Mountain Life. It's
Thank you
been a
for having
wonderful
me.
conversation. Again, the book is Guilt Free: Reclaiming Your Life from Unreasonable Expectations. Thank you, Jennifer.
Thank you, Lynn.
Thanks for listening to The Mountain Life here on KPCW. If you like what you hear, leave us a comment, rate us, and be sure to subscribe to stay on top of all of our show episodes. And if you have an idea for a future episode of The Mountain Life, email us at themountainlife@kpcw.org.